Well, we might have crashed Dr. Richard Boylan's website for a little bit, but I'm sure it'll come right back up. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Richard Boylan. Richard, this is an incredible story. How many people believe it when you talk to them about it?
I talk to people who are familiar with the UFO field and my work, and they take it in stride. I mean, the Altamirans are not the first people to come to Earth by any means, and this is another layer of the ongoing interaction between star nations and the people of Earth, and I'm sure it's not the last layer of interaction, but it's another step forward as we move beyond touch and go to a more stable kind of living together and working together. I'd like to introduce the 12 people of this team to our listeners real briefly so that they get a sense of what each of these people are doing here, if I may.
Yeah, they're not with you now, are they?
No.
Okay.
Chris and Oman are technology specialists. Their specialty area is working reversing the damage that our technologies are doing to the environment, and that includes some of the electromagnetic fields and some of the advanced exotic technology that the Cabal or Illuminati are using that people aren't aware of but is damaging the Earth, for example. They have an underwater craft that uses highly advanced technology that went kaplooey in the North Sea and has caused a great environmental damage field there that is going to need some attention. There are three botanical specialists. Fred, number one, as we call him, because another guy liked the Fred name so much, he wanted it too, so we have to call him Fred 1, Fred 2. But Fred 1 works above with the above-water green vegetation. Alvin and Luke work with the vegetation underwater, one in the freshwater environments, one in the seawater environments. There's a woman who's a energy specialist, Mata, who uses healing energies and closest analogy to her work in human culture terms might be psychotherapeutics or Reiki or other kinds of psychic energy healing work. There are four environmental specialists. Fred number two likes to work with the environment of fire. So that would involve things like the magma and lava. Sam works with the fresh and saline water environment. Alfred specializes in the atmosphere. And Tom works with the earth crust. And Amanda is their communications specialist, what we might call their public information officer.
They brought a PR person?
Well, not so much PR, but communications. She's the one my team tends to communicate with the most because that's her specialty. She's not tied up in the environmental work as much as communicating back and forth and carrying messages from us to them and them to us, so they're all on the same page. And the overall administrator is Gene, Commander Gene, as I call him, because he has a kind of forceful military bearing. He's a no-nonsense, but, you know, he sees everything gets done and is done in good order, as a good administrator will do.
That's
the 12.
What do they wear, Richard? What kind of uniforms or outfits?
They in their own culture, they sometimes don't even bother with clothes. Around here, they've been seen wearing robes, loose-fitting robes. They're used to a planet where the sun is dimmer, and they find our environment pretty bright. So they generally prefer to work either in twilight or the dark or in shady environments like forest canopies, you know, where there's shade. They prefer a warmish climate but can make do with a cold climate, you know, if their environmental work takes them up into the northern latitudes or the extreme southern latitudes. It might be in those environments they would have a little bit sturdier clothing, but mostly they seem to prefer the looser fitting robe kind of basic clothing.
And what kind of equipment did they bring, Richard?
Well, extremely advanced. I have not seen it. Their whole operation is cloaked, and I'm not sure I'd know what I was seeing if I did see it. But it makes our stuff look pale by comparison. And more to the point, they have a technology that doesn't use destructive levels of electromagnetic fields, or it certainly doesn't put out any pollution. There's no electrical or gas engine kind of thing. So it's quite neat, and I think we are lucky to have people with such advanced abilities helping us out with our project of trying to turn around the environmental destruction on Earth.
Okay, to the phones we go. Let's go to our wild card line. Andy in L.A., you're on with us. Hi there, Andy.
Hi, George. You have a great show, as usual.
Thank you.
And you're getting better as time goes on, by the way, George. My question to you is for your guest. Number one, is there any time frame as far as how much time we have left before we reach that point of no return where it will be a lost cause? And number two, you know, without being judgmental, how do you know for a fact that these individuals have the positive intent for our planet, as opposed to using that as a cover story for a bigger intent, possibly like to habitate our Earth someday and placing their own hybrids or whatever in place of us in the future? And thank
almost,
you for your time.
You're welcome, man. Almost like the to serve man routine in the Twilight Zone. So a twofold question, Richard. First of all, how much time do we have, really?
Well, our scientists at the Rio de Janeiro conference, which was almost a decade ago, said that they were seeing the breakdown of environmental systems at such an alarming rate that they thought that if we didn't straighten up and fly right, you know, and start to seriously change our ways, that we would reach the point of no return by 2025. The presence of the Altamirans here may affect that equation a little bit, but I guess I'm really hesitant to say that because I don't want to say anything that would give people an excuse to say, oh, well, I'll just keep throwing, you know, garbage into the river and throw my trash out the window of the car, you know, screw the planet, let them clean it up. We'll never get anywhere with that kind of an approach.
What will they recommend, or will they get tough here with us? I mean, if you know, I'm a believer that global warming was going to happen anyway, Richard. It's a cycle, but I do think man speeds things on a little bit. I mean, will they get to a point where they say, you folks are polluting? I mean, there's no question we're polluting. Will they do something to stop us?
No, they're not here to take over our society and tell us which way is north. You know, they understand we're an intelligent species. We have the capacity to know what's right. In fact, many people in our own cultures will lecture us a lot harder than they would ever hope to lecture us. You know, if we listen to our own more progressive scientists, we have all the lecture we need. It's up to us to make a good faith effort to take the environmental crisis seriously and roll up our sleeves and do something about it. They certainly come out of their way at great expense and risk and really the ending of their life as they knew it on their own planet to come here and come to a foreign place and hunker down and help pitch in with us on environmental remediation. It's going to take all of the effort of all of us, Altamirans and humans, to turn this thing around, and we absolutely do need to do that. As for the listener's second question about whether this is
a
Trojan horse operation to lull us while they prepare for invasion, that's not the case. Star Nations doesn't allow that kind of behavior. The Federation of Intelligent Civilizations of the Galaxy and which is also organizing various races, contacts with Earth, and making sure that things operate at a level that we can handle in our, without having a mental meltdown. So that's not in the cards. The Ultramarines are here as a generous, self-sacrificing gift to the people of Earth. Star Nations has told me, by the by, though, that from time to time they hope we would, as we get ourselves more advanced in our civilization and clean up our planet, reach a level of maturity in terms of our communication and relations with the various star races that are in contact with us, where we would become receptive if, say, a race on a dying star needed to find another place to live and wanted to come here. This might be on the order of, say, 3 million people, which is about the population of Lithuania. In other words, a reasonably very small drop in the bucket on the 6 billion people of Earth and our large landmass, some of which is not even inhabited currently.
True.
So, down the road, if we're looking decades out, and as we grow up as a people and not only come to peace with a UFO reality, but resume our own space program and get out to Mars and so forth, and everybody kind of wakes up and says, we're a cosmic society. Our boundaries are not the edge of Earth's horizon, but we're just one of many inhabited planets on many civilizations in the cosmos. So once we, as a people of Earth, get that perspective going and stop treating it as Buck Rogers woo-woo stuff, they hope we will reach a level of maturity in our culture and society where we will say, if among the various situations out there, there's a civilization that's on a dying star, it needs a place to hunker down and find a new place to live, that we might put out the welcome mat for such a civilization. And of course, these civilizations don't come in with a begging bowl in hand. They have advanced technology and highly developed spiritual, metaphysical, and knowledge stores they bring with them. They would hardly come empty-handed. But I would hope humanity as a society would reach that level of maturity in the decades ahead to where, if that situation were presented to us, we would step up to the plate in a hospitable way and make room for that to take place.
Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, please. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Calgary, Alberta.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Mr. Norrie, as usual, you don't do anything by halves. This is an extraordinary topic. And Dr. Boylan, this is astounding news. I've just finished reading Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth, in which, of course, the topic is about awareness and consciousness and evolving. And, I can't believe the synchronicity about this. I'm involved in an environmental education project, and I suppose by other standards, that is, outside of Earth, they're considered primitive, but it's about sustainability. And, of course, my big question is, how on Earth do you meet one of these folks to talk about topics like that?
You're an environmental scientist.
Environmental education.
Education. All right. Well, close enough. Nice to talk to you, and appreciate the perspective you bring and the implied respect I feel that you would bring to such a meeting. They look forward to working with Earth environmental specialists as soon as this can happen in a safe way. Safe meaning without the cabal, the bad boys, the plutocrats breaking up such a meeting and hauling off them to indefinite imprisonment. I don't think people appreciate the siege that we live in, and how the behind the scenes rulers have deprived us of a smooth, comfortable, kind of ordinary style interaction with the star beings. They have to come here always looking over the shoulder about whether they're going to get shot at by the operatives of the cabal. But if we can get them disempowered, reform our society to where it's not run by the big money power drunk types, and we get back to a family-like society where everybody can relax and breathe and not have to look over the shoulder, they would be utterly delighted to meet with good-hearted people like I feel yourself is, and some of our top environmental scientists, because they don't want to just come here, you know, like Cape Crusaders and rescue Earth's environment from the stupid humans and turn it around by themselves. It's going to take our efforts, too, and they don't want to do it that way. You know, we have a responsibility as the indigenous native pop intelligent race of Earth to take care of our own planet. There here's an extra additional set of helping hands, but they can neither morally nor in any other way do our work for us, and they don't want to do that. They want to be collaborative with us. So your offer and your interest is welcome, and if we can get our society reformed to where these evil power mongers are put out of the way and don't represent a threat any longer, then they are quite prepared to come forward and work collaboratively with our advanced scientists in the environmental areas. And they would like nothing better than also going public in a forum, going on television in some kind of global setting and introducing themselves. Wouldn't that be nice? Instead of this kind of furtiveness we have to operate at, because the big boys won't allow this kind of relaxed, ordinary interaction among peoples to happen.
Richard, about 7 years ago, Dr. Kirill Rosen worked with the late Dr. Wernher von Braun, talked about what he told her, that dark forces, again, I'll call them the Illuminati, the globalists, wanted to plan a fake extraterrestrial invasion so they could acquire total global control. You know, I've talked to her before. She was on my local show in St. Louis a long, long time ago. She's a very credible person. I don't think she'd make this story up.
No, I know her, too. She's a friend, and I've watched Carol in action over the years. Her credentials are impeccable as an aerospace corporation chief and heartfelt scientist. And the fact that Wernher von Braun trusted her with this secret shows her character, because Wernher didn't go on national television and say that. But he knew Carol, and he knew Carol would, at the right moment, pass his secret on to a wider audience where that information would do good.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, Richard, when we come right back, and then we'll take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, do they still make those balsa planes, you know, with the propellers, the plastic propellers and the rubber band, and you kind of twirl it and then you let them go? I used to love those things as a kid. I got a little bet with Tom. I think they do. I think they still have them out there, but I have not spotted them in a long, long time. Hey, I'm going to be at the X Conference in Washington, D.C. this month in April. And if you need more information, if you live on the East Coast, come on by and join up for this event. It's supposed to be just incredible. Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell will headline most of those events. He'll be there. But go to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the information, and if you're in the area, come on by. Richard, back to this discussion that Dr. Kirill Rosen had with the Wernher von Braun, then we'll...
Yeah.
Final phone calls here.
Yeah.
He was not implying, though, that extraterrestrials don't exist and that governments were going to make this up. He was merely saying there was going to be hostile action that was made up, right?
Right. He revealed a three-step program the Cabal or New World Order Illuminati have way back decades ago, and now it's coming unfolded to assume global rule. The first step was the Cold War, which was a crock, We've heard leaks from the intelligence community, and I certainly have from Star Nations, that, from my friend Dr. Wolf inside the National Security Council, that, for example, there's been a satellite in orbit for 30-some years, almost 40 years now, staffed by American and Russian astronauts, and this all during the Cold War. That was the first thing, the fake enemy threat. Then the second threat was terrorism, which we're living through now, much of which is fomented by the rich money boys playing off one set of aggrieved people against another. The final threat von Braun revealed was going to be a fake alien invasion actually done by the cabal Illuminati, who have anti-gravity craft and very advanced weapon systems. Your tax dollars have gone into Star Wars weapons, nuclear particle beam, killer lasers, and stuff much more exotic than that. And they are quite capable of fielding a fleets of anti-gravity craft armed to the teeth with these exotic weapons and look all for the world like an alien invasion, like the stuff in video games or movies. And their purpose of doing this is to scare the bejesus out of people so that they kowtow when the big boys in their puppet presidents of various countries say, we have a global emergency, we need to declare global martial law, you need to cede all power to us, emergency powers. We've already been through the drill on a U.S. level. Extrapolate that to the entire planet, and you have their wet dream of how they hope it will come down as a result of this fake alien war filling up our sky.
If these large triangular-shaped objects are any indication, then they're getting pretty close to their plan.
Well, there's certainly plenty of stuff in the air. That very large triangle over Stephenville, Texas, is an example of a cabal anti-gravity craft being piloted by a hybrid clone that has some captured Star Visitor genes grafted onto a human. And this craft operates in a interface between the mental field of the pilot and the mental field of the artificial intelligence system of the craft. This stuff is Star Wars-y, decades ahead of anything in the unclassified world. This stuff is operational, real, and armed, and they're quite capable of doing it today, tomorrow, you know, months from now. I have information from my psychic team, who's overheard some of the planning, that the plans are to do this before the election, before November 4. They are not happy with things that are not going their way. A lot of the plans they had are starting to fall apart. Some of the people who followed what I've been putting on my mailing list, emailing list, are aware of various operations where some of the loyal behind-the-scenes military intelligence units and some of our psychic folks have worked together to take down some of their installations. They've lost a lot of key personnel. Their plan is to escalate to this level very rapidly before they can lose any more opportunity.
So you're saying just months away then, Richard?
That's their plan. If Star Nations has said that if they do a flat-out global war and start shooting up a bunch of countries and killing lots of people, that Star Nations will step in and stop that. But these guys are prepared to do that and will start to crank it up unless we can either out them and take away their advanced toys, or Star Nation has to step in and stop them and abort them in mid-flight, as it were.
Interesting.
But that's the timeline that I understand they're operating from.
Well, it's close. Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on with Richard Boylan. Hi there.
Hello.
Yep, go ahead, please.
Are you calling for Dot?
I don't know. You must be Dot, west of the Rockies. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, I am. Good evening, Mr. Norrie and Mr. Bowen. You're going to love me. I'm doing this for the listeners tonight. I've had my own personal experience. It took 2 years to find out what I experienced when I heard it on the program with Art Bell. This is going to do a great deal for your credibility, because if anything could be more funkier than what I experienced, I wouldn't have believed it myself till I heard it on the program.
What happened, Bell?
Everything comes in twos. So I've been studying for years, and when it comes in twos, I know it undeniably and unmistakably. He mentioned tonight about the tall whites in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, my intellect would have said, yeah, that's a ploy for Vegas, you know, and forget about it. But my family goes to Laughlin, and we've rented the top of Don Laughlin's towers there, the Riverside. And I talked to him before. So we went into Stupak's tower a number of years ago. And this is just so weird. My family goes one by one. Now, mind you, I've never drank and never smoked since I was a child. I've just never got into that. So the only thing that happened to me that night was I was tired. But I saw this whitehead, and you can't mistake, you know, Don Laughlin's whitehead of hair. So I thought, oh, that looks like Don Laughlin from a distance. So I said, oh, I'm going to go see him, see if that's him. Well, this person was sitting down alone. He had a head of white hair, but he was much larger. Don Laughlin's small. He's much, much larger. You could tell when I got up close. And we made a right turn. And as I walked behind him, I felt something. And I thought, well, he must be an albino. And I turned around, and I looked at him, and he was looking down. And the minute my thought said, I wonder who he is, I don't know why I even thought that, all of a sudden he looked up at me, and his eyes met my eyes, and I knew that he had heard me somehow, but I didn't speak. You know what I'm saying? But it's a knowing when you hit somebody's eyes and something can go between you.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to stop. I was like, but my family kept going. And so when I observed it, sure enough, just like the man said, there was a back, there was a half table, there was one dealer, there was the albino, and he was like hunched down on the table with his elbows out. So he looked smaller, you know. And then there was like bodyguards behind him, because I've had family that's been in law enforcement, and they had their arms crossed, and I knew they were some kind of security. But I kept looking at him as I walked away, and he just kept staring at me until I left, because I didn't want to get lost from my family. So this is the most freaky thing, because with all my intellect, I never would have believed it. I experienced it, but it took 2 years later till I heard that first guy mention it. And now I hear Dr. Boylan mention this. This is the funkiest thing that he could have said that would have been unbelievable.
Well, Richard, do they look like this, like what she experienced, what Dot saw?
Yeah, their skin is kind of chalky white in texture. It's much whiter than a person who needs a little suntan in human terms. That's the most striking feature. Their eyes are a little different than ours. They usually handle that by putting on some sunglasses. I guess they can use contact lenses, too, to pass for more human-looking eyes. Other than that, and the fact that they run on the tall side, six would be small, 7 feet, and maybe even a little more. They keep growing for hundreds of years. But other than that, they're pretty close to human-looking, enough that just a little bit of work, maybe, for the females, a little cosmetics, maybe a wig or sunglasses, and they can pass for, you know, we would say kind of an odd-looking guy, maybe a little genetically off. He didn't get 100% human recipe when he was born. But it wouldn't startle you, and if you're busy in a crowded casino, you wouldn't really give him a second thought. The woman, Dot, is very observant, because NSA does detail security for these tall whites. They don't want, just in case they get discovered, they don't want anybody accosting them or, God forbid, trying to harm them. That would create an interstellar diplomatic incident that nobody wants on either side. So they do have quiet security behind them to make sure everything goes well. So Dot just described it to a T, and I've talked to Charles Hall for hours, the Air Force gentleman who brought this story to the world's attention in his books from his own work with them decades ago. And, you know, he described the same thing, the security details that come with them. So, you know, Dot was a very observant lady, and she got it, it sounds like, 100%.
Okay, let's go next to our East of the Rockies line. Tim, you're on the air with us. Hey, Tim. Go ahead, Tim. All right, got to run. Let's go to our next line. Let's go to our wild card line. It's you, AC. Go ahead.
How you doing? I got a couple quick actions, quick questions. Number one, how do they see our religion and the way that we do our religion as far as God? How do they see that? And do they have different races and classes of people, and do they have their own religion? Do they practice their religion? And then on Illuminati, I know that the Illuminati are real because I'm a Mason and I read a lot about them. How can we get the Illuminati out? As far as, do the star people have a way, or just pretty much they're going to leave it up to us to get them out? And I just listened to your comments off the air, and great show again, George. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, AC.
Well, there's three good questions, George.
And we'll only have time for maybe two, Richard.
Well, we'll take them one at a time and see how far we get. How do they see our religion? Well, let me back up and say that the star races operate from a spirituality that is much more advanced than some of the religious formulations on Earth. If you go to my website to the 1111 laws section under the star visitor section of my website, there you would see the fact that the star visitors have 11 universal laws and 11 spiritual laws that they all agree on, sort of the Ten Commandments of the cosmos, if you will. High moral spiritual principles that almost look like philosophical principles. And their teachers, their great teachers, have been lent to us from time to time over human civilization. We know them as figures like Lao Tse or Buddha, Jesus, white buffalo calf woman, etc., and have taught these principles to various societies on Earth in different centuries, trying to uplift our moral and philosophical horizons so that we would reach our highest potential as an intelligent spiritual species. They have somewhat been distressed by seeing the original teachings of these great teachers somewhat distorted later on by humans who, as the teachings get passed down, add their own two cents to it and add some distortions and some human ideas that really don't settle very well with the original pure teachings of the great teachers. So they see it as somewhat a mixed bag. They appreciate the high aspirations of the spirituality embedded in our religions and the original core intention of the great teachers. They would like to see us get back to the original principles and not get sidetracked by some of the things, the human additions that monks and scribes have added on over the centuries. Their religion is not really a religion. It's a spirituality. It embeds the way they do life 24 hours a day. It isn't something they reserve for a Sunday or a particular building they go to. It's a spiritualized whole way of living and thinking about their relationship to Source, which is how they look at God. And it's much more organic and incorporated than the way some people practice their religion on Earth. As for different races out there, you bet. In fact, just to give you a set of numbers, in terms of the civilizations visiting Earth, there are 1,483 star races that have made contact with Earth. Some of them are more frequent flyers, like the Zetas and Pleiadians and so forth, Reptoids, Prey Mantis folk, and so forth. But there are that many races. That isn't all the races there are out there in the cosmos. That's just the number of races that have made Earth kind of a special project and come here. There are, I would think, millions of different races in the universe. In a given star, which would have a number of planets, there are intelligent races in some systems on different planets in that share a common star. So there's a lot of variety out there. I think one of the exciting things that is coming up ahead for the human race as we become a cosmic society is, and we get rid of these doggone cabal or Illuminati overlords that like to think they're running our planet for us, and we get...
Well, they're out there, Richard. They're out there, my friend. Hey, we're out of time. Dr. Richard Boylan's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Fascinating show, Richard. Thank you so much. For Kiris Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.